A very simple statement that says a lot, that can be quite meaningful, is the simple statement, here we are, here, just here. And to the degree to which we are here together, we're here this week sharing this life of a week on retreat, sharing a practice which can be understood as, among other things, really meeting ourselves, encountering who we are, what goes on within us, and finding our way with that. And here we are, group of people spending a week finding our way, finding our path, finding ourselves. And to some degree we're finding ourselves through the teachings of the Buddha. And in this retreat, the teachings on the four foundations, or the four resolves, or aspirations. The foundation, maybe it starts as an aspiration, then becomes a foundation. The foundation of wisdom, the foundation of truth, of relinquishment, and of peace. And as we find our way, find our lives, find ourselves, what does it mean to have these part of our life? Wisdom, truth, letting go, peace. There's a story of some great monarch of a big realm who wanted to have a painting made that exquisitely represented peaceful painting. And there was a huge reward for this, so people from all over the realm submitted their paintings. Some of them were exquisitely peaceful to look at. But the king, or the monarch, rejected them all. And they kept looking for, the ministers would go out across the land looking for more and more painters to find someone who could come with a painting that would satisfy the monarch who was getting impatient for peace. And and then they heard rumors of that far off in the hinterland of the country in the mountains, there was a very poor farmer who could paint. Well, they tried everyone else, so they went and found this farmer. Could you please, you know, do a painting of peace for the monarch? And so the farmer did. And then they brought the painting to the capital and unveiled it in front of the monarch. And the monarch was kind of startled and a little upset. You know, it did not seem like a peaceful painting whatsoever. It was a painting of a raging waterfall. Big, tall, wide, the water falls down far and bounces back up. And raging waterfall. The monarch said, well, what's peaceful about this? And the farmer who was there said, oh, you have to look really close. Come here with me. And they went up close to the painting. And there was a little kind of outcrop, but you look through the raging water, was a little parted a little bit, and there was a little shelf behind the water. And there behind on that little shelf was a little nest with a bird sitting there very peacefully on its eggs. And the monarch was satisfied. He gave that farmer the award. So the world can be a raging place. The world can be a place of lots of waterfalls, some more violent than others. But to find our peace in this world, to find a little shelf where we can sit maybe, or the shelf in our heart where we can be, to discover peace, not by requiring the world to stop flowing, changing, doing what it does, not by getting everyone to behave just like we want them to be, but what is it to be in the world as it is and to be at peace? I think that makes our peace more realistic and more useful. So what is it to find peace? And the word peace perhaps is maybe too big of a word. So I like the word untroubled. What is it to have an untroubled heart? What is it to have an untroubled mind? But I like the language of the heart, untroubled heart. To walk through the world untroubled, untroubled heart. The word in this text on for peace upasama is the same word in one of the most famous chants of our tradition. Anicca vata sankara upadava yodamino Bhagitu aneru chanti tesang vipassamo sukho. All things are impermanent. They have the nature of arising and passing away. All things are impermanent. They have the nature of arising and passing away. Arising or coming into being, they cease. Their peace, the word here is their peace, or their calming, or their settling, or their stilling, is happiness. All conditioned things are impermanent. They have the nature of arising and passing. The word conditioned here, all conditioned things, primarily refers to all the activities of the mind. All the churnings and workings of the mind and the heart. And we get very familiar with these things when we're on retreat. We get familiar with how our minds works, and sometimes become familiar with what we think how it doesn't work. We become familiar with how it works, the beliefs we live under, the reactions and impulses we have, what we're trying to do or not to do. And as, you know, as we settle in and see more clearly, we start seeing more and more sometimes the subtlety of how things work. What we're trying to accomplish, how we're reacting, how we're interpreting and seeing what's important, what we're trying to do. I was thinking during or after Andrea's talk yesterday about how one of the first things I encountered about myself that was kind of challenging when I started sitting retreats was to see how much guilt I carried with me. That I was just wrong. With, you know, no matter what I did, I was not just wrong, I was guilty. And I remember it was so, you know, how I walked across the meditation hall floor in the retreat, just how I walked, I was guilty. If I opened the door, I was guilty. You know, guilty before proven innocent for anything I did. It was quite something to see it operating all the way there, always kind of, I didn't see it in my daily life. It was operating, but it was, you know, kind of subtle kind of mood in the background. And eventually that passed. And then I saw that subtle attitude that was always there kind of in the background also was the grass is always greener somewhere else. Somewhere else, some other experience is better than this one. Someone else knows what it is. Someone else understands. It's always somewhere else. And then it got, that kind of faded and got to be more subtle. And then it was, whatever I'm experiencing is not the right thing. Whatever, if I'm experiencing it, it doesn't count. If I'm experiencing it, it's not what it's supposed to be. I wasn't guilty. I was just not. It just wasn't. I didn't always think it was wrong. I mean, I didn't feel bad often about it, but it was just like always that little nag. Oh, it's not what it's. You know, if you're supposed to wear, you know, blue shirts. Well, I'm not really blue in my shirt. This is not what they mean. You know, I'm not. So it was very, very, it was made like a whisper in the mind. But there's a whisper in the mind, seeing these little attitudes and overlays on top of the experience. They kind of created a kind of momentum and swirl. And even though it was very subtle, the continuity of doing it, you know, minute after minute, hour after hour, added up to tension, to swirls, to reactivity, to all kinds of things that went on. It was not peaceful. Where I was troubled, my heart was troubled. And so to have an untroubled heart, here we are. Here. And I think it's a very profound statement to be reminded we're here. Breathing. We're just here. What if just being here, breathing, being aware, feeling, sensing, thinking. What if? Just imagine, what if there was no problem? Some person said once that I had a lot of problems in my life, most of which never happened. And I know that that was my situation. A lot of my problems were about things that were coming or things that I'm imagination. And I have a very high percentage rate of having problems which never ever came about. Worrying about some situation and what was going to happen. And came to that time and place and it was all different than I ever could have imagined. What if you sit here right now breathing, you imagine the possibility that this moment there's no problem. You're just here, breathing, upright in your body, in a room of other people practicing. Listening to someone who's talking about not having problems. There's no problem. What if? So imagine that. And then imagine, given me the benefit of the doubt that there's no problems at this moment. As if. And then sit and wait for when the problems begin. What arises in your mind that troubles you, that causes your heart to be troubled? What do you add on top of this moment that becomes, makes it a problem, or makes life a problem this moment? What troubles you then? And I think it's very significant, the idea that this contrast between being able to sit, at least in imagination, here peacefully, with no problem, at ease, just a very simple act of being here, the contrast of that and then being troubled. And is what happens in that interface? What happens? What do we pick up? What goes on in us? What happens? Many years ago, I was taught the wonderful practice, very simple definition, or very one of the simplest meditation instructions that I ever heard that I thought were really profound, really profound, really. The instructions are, set yourself at ease, and then notice what takes you away from it. Set yourself at ease, and notice what takes you away. And I understood that from that instruction that I didn't have to put myself into perfect ease and wait until then, but just whatever modicum of ease I can put myself into. Even if I was agitated, it would just mean a little bit less agitated. But then notice what caused me to leave that, what happens inside of me. Stop and look at that, investigate that, be present for that. Question that. And I like this simple instruction because it's free of a lot of spiritual materialism. It's free of a lot of grand ideas of what's supposed to happen. One of the challenges that I had, and I think many people had in my early years of practice doing Zen, was back then, maybe not anymore in Zen, back then, that community, there was a sense that there was something, there was an it to attain, it to be, to understand, to realize. But it was never clear what it was. But there was someone who had it. There was some it. And sometimes there would be a really grand, flowery language about what this it was. Big, wonderful language. And I kind of struggled under this. Oh, you know, this, I'm supposed to attain this, understand this complicated thing. The 64 permutations of emptiness. Whatever it might have been. The unconditioned nirvana. Satori. All kinds of things. But I don't know if we have to be caught up in grand spiritual ideas of stuff, attainments. And that's what this teaching, set yourself at ease and then notice what takes you away. Just kind of, in my mind, just cuts through all that. And it does something, I think it points to something, I think, you know, really primary and immediate and something that's always practical and meaningful. And the more I practice Buddhism and the more I study Buddhism, that simple teaching kind of says it all, or points to it all. The end of suffering is the end of unease, to be untroubled. So this chant, the Anicca Vata Sankara, points to that the activities of the mind, what goes on in our minds that comes and goes, and which we can hold lightly, which we can kind of see as being somehow not so substantial that we have to latch onto it, cling to it, live under the weight of these things that goes on in the mind, the thoughts, the beliefs, the desires and the fears. We see them as somehow insubstantial, as coming and going, rising and passing. And what is it that allows us to have the to put them to rest? There's a story of a version of a story of a seeker who was seeking peace. And this person went traveling around the country looking for someone who could teach peace. And the person carried all the belongings in a bag over the one shoulder, big bag of stuff. Going around, carrying this big bag and saying, where can I find peace? And finally no one could give a good answer. And then came across someone who said, an old wise person who said, oh, peace. Put down your bag. Put down your bag. So we carry with us these bags for a long time. What bags are you carrying? So the stilling of the formations, quieting, bring into peace, is the bags we carry, ancient bags that we've inherited from family, society, ideas. What if anything that takes away from the untroubled heart is just a bag? Maybe it's not always needed. Maybe it's okay to put them down and just be here, breathing, feeling, sensing, hearing, just aware. So the Buddha said, the supreme noble peace is, in this translation, is the pacification of lust, hate, and delusion. It's this word upasama. So it's the stilling or the quieting or bringing to peace or the calming. The supreme noble peace is the calming of lust, hate, and delusion. And I love this kind of description as well, because very meaningful for me, at least, because it avoids some of this grand spiritual language and points to something that's very direct and experiential and something we can kind of see in ourselves. We can kind of know, hopefully, when there's lust and when there's hate. A little bit harder to see delusion, but you can see delusion as well. And this is kind of the work, is to kind of put this down, to calm this down, still the stilling of greed, of lust. It's not about having some great spiritual experience or attainment. A more humble way of practicing is to be content with having an untroubled heart. And greed and hate and delusion keep that heart from being untroubled. So here, it's called a foundation, the foundation of peace. And it said that one should train for peace. One should train to have this an untroubled heart. And then if it, the way that this text at least talks about training for that, closest it gets to explaining that, is would be paraphrased by saying, if an untroubled heart has no greed, then you train by decreasing your greed, weakening your greed, not acting on the greed, letting it not run the show. If peace is the ending of hate, we train for it by not giving in to hate. But letting the hate kind of starve or weaken or fade away. And if the peace is found through lack of delusion, then it's the ending of delusion, illusion, enchantment, fantasies. When one is ignorant, one experienced covetousness, desire, and lust. But now, that one has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, done away with them, so they no longer arise. Formerly, when one was ignorant, one experienced anger, ill will, and hate. Now that one has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, done away with them so they no longer arise. Formerly, when one was ignorant, one experienced ignorance and delusion. Now one has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a done away with them so they no longer arise. To me, the simplicity of that, it may be not easy to do, but the simplicity of that description, to start becoming sensitive and aware, to have enough mindfulness, just enough mindfulness. Maybe it doesn't have to be like stellar mindfulness that's, you're going to win the mindfulness Olympics. But enough mindfulness to notice when greed arises, or aversion arises, or to make it really simple, so kind of the exploration, to notice when the mind moves towards something or moves away from it. You know, the attention goes toward, I want that, or moves away, I don't want that. Or go towards it to push it away. Does the heart move, the mind move, awareness move towards something or away from something? And of course it will. It's okay. It's really okay. But to see it, to know it, to see clearly what we're doing, to see what we succumb to, what we indulge in, what we participate in, what we fuel, what do we do? What kind of activities of the mind do we participate in? So if you're afraid, do you lean into the fear? Do you collapse in the fear? Do you feed the fear with fearful thoughts? Or could you just allow the fear to be there, but see it very clearly? Oh, this is fear. Not a problem, but not something to be for or against, just something to be and feel. to feel despair. Just, it's okay. Maybe have compassion. It's okay. Just let it be there. Not before or against it, just there, simple. One of the reasons I like this kind of description of the goal, the calming of greed, hate, and delusion, is that we're left with ourselves then. Everything else we're left with. And often in spiritual circles, there's a kind of feeling, that idea sometimes, that you have to kind of somehow twist yourself into a spiritual pretzel. You know, be a certain way and behave a certain way. I think more and more it's appropriate just to appreciate ourselves and appreciate others. I like to think of everyone from the point of view of their gift. Everyone has a gift. Everyone is a gift. We can value everyone for their uniqueness, their specialness, who they are. And so, you know, I think one of the primary forces that kind of keeps us from really being who we are is greed, hate, and delusion. And so rather than finding out who we are, that's also one of those great quests that is kind of a headache. Find out who I am. But to shed greed, hate, and delusion, then what you're left with is the answer. What you're left with is good enough. What you're left with is just the absence of trouble. You're left with an untroubled heart. And it might still be interesting to know who you are, but it's not that important anymore. You get to just be who you are without even necessarily needing to know who you are in some kind of, you know, label. Oh, this means I'm this. I think it's one of the teachings of the Buddha is that anytime you put add a word to I am, this is who I really am. It's like wind drag. It slows us down. So even great words like I'm love. That's so inspiring. But I'm love. It just slows us down. I'm pure consciousness. I'm empty. I am whatever, just not needed. But to be free of greed, clinging, grasping, the contraction of that, I mean, that is a great thing. It's so, to me, in my mind, I don't know how it is for you hearing this, but for me, it's such a simple, direct, compassionate, simple thing. Just take care of that. And then everything else, you can just be then how you are. And I see it as a very generous view of human nature, humans, that you get to, who you are is great. You get to be who you are. You don't have to apologize for yourself or explain yourself or defend yourself or prove yourself. You can just breathe. Feel, sense, think. Just be as you are. But if you like more esoteric ideas, and you know, you're free of greed, hate, and delusion, but you still kind of have a predilection, you know, propensity to the mystical and esoteric. And Buddhism is happy to offer you that too. So in this text, he goes on to say, if you establish yourself on these four foundations, wisdom, truth, relinquishment, and peace, then the tides of conceiving will not sweep you away. Someone recently had the expression, this thought arose, but I decided not to go down that road. It's another way of saying it, you know. Okay, not going down that road. So that person wasn't swept away by the tides of conceiving. there's no tides on the road, but that idea that we, you know, we don't have to go take that road, we don't have to get swept away. So these four foundations can really keep us from being swept away in a way that maybe many other things can't. And then the Buddha went on, I said this on Monday, first talk. So what are these tides of conceiving we can sweep us away? And I am is a conceiving. So the thought of I am something, I am X, is just, and the word for conceiving is a word that in Pali can also mean imagining. I am is a conceiving. I am this is a conceiving. I shall be is a conceiving. I shall not be is a conceiving. And he goes on with other examples like this. And then he says, conceiving is a disease, an illness. It can be, this kind of imaginary fantasy of who we are. Overcoming all conceivings, one is called a sage at peace. And here's the more esoteric. And the sage at peace is not born, does not age, does not die, is not shaken, and does not yearn. For there is nothing present in the sage at peace that can be born. So what does it mean, here and now, to not be born, or to not age, I mean, to not die? Maybe the Buddha, could the Buddha have been saying this when he was quite old and senile and lost touch with, you know, his mindfulness wasn't so strong anymore, he didn't notice that we're aging, you know, it's obvious. Or maybe he did this when he was really young, and sometimes the young don't realize that we age. Of course we age. What do you mean, no aging? No birth, no death, no aging. Many years ago in Palo Alto, there was a woman part of our group, sitting group, who ran a women's dance troupe for many years, 40 years or something. And for her 75th birthday, she had a party. She rented a big church room and put on a show and with her dance troupe, dancers. And a very touching play, or a piece for me at least. And it was a dance that depicted the four stages in women's lives, or four stages. And in each stage that was being danced kind of expressed the beauty and the dignity and the value of that age. And so the first were these kind of, I don't know, sprite, energetic or something, 20-year-olds came and danced. And then there were these women in their maybe 40, 35 to 45 maybe, and maybe they were parents or, you know, established in their life or something, and they danced a whole different way. And then there was the women who were in their 60s. And it was exquisite to watch. And then it was this friend of mine. She came on the stage alone, 75-year-old, and she danced the crone. And, you know, she could not jump. And the 20-year-olds, they were danced like running in the meadow. But she couldn't do that, right? And but there was incredible beauty in her dancing a 75-year-old. Like, there was perfection in that. It was just like that was a fullness, the completion of, not the completion of a life, but that was a complete, there was nothing wrong with that. There was nothing short. There was no there was nothing second best to any of these ages, but nothing second best to being this 75-year-old just there to be herself. Just that. Is there aging? From one point of view, there is aging. From another point of view, there is no aging whatsoever. There's this moment. And this moment has no past and future to it. It's just this. There's no need to compare it or compare you to you, who you were and who you will be. You're allowed just to be here and breathe and not add on top of your breathing, your body, your being, your add on top. You don't have to paint or add on top of yourself ideas, concepts, and judgments, and reference points to past and future. You can just be the fullness of who you are now, without definition. And in that moment, there's something about a moment of clear mindfulness, simple mindfulness of this moment, where there is no aging, there is no birth, there is no death, there's just this. So here we are, is a profound statement. Here we are, no birth, no aging, no death. And if possible, without being shaken and without yearning, not being agitated, without hoping and wishing, we're allowed to do this. We have permission to just be. We have permission to not overlay anything on top of this moment, the simplicity of this moment, the simplicity of you here and now. There is much more peace here in the present moment, then there is agitation. There's a vast ocean of peace in comparison to the drop of agitation you might have. Let yourself be at ease, and then notice what takes you away from that. Let yourself be untroubled, and then notice when you start feeling troubled. And perhaps it's enough just to notice it clearly. Just to know that that's what's happening. Maybe that's enough. Maybe you don't have to get rid of your unease, your trouble. But see it clearly. And see it clearly in relationship to the foundation of peace, the reference point of being at ease.